Okay, Dr. Stan, back at Radio Liberty. Mike, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Continuing to connect the dots, Costco, wherever they're located now, I'm sure they probably still have use of their old spot, which is just a few miles north up the coast from the Long Beach site.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever they might be using in the future or whatever they're doing now, what you've got is really an uncontrolled pipeline from the Chinese Communist Army. Since it's a communist nation, it controls the means of production and I guess you could say transportation too. It's going to control Costco no matter how you want to look at it. And they can bring whatever they want to right within the same vicinity as this rocket launching platform.
Right.
And it says right here, now this is off a Boeing website. The home port where this thing is based includes a warehouse that can house up to 3 Zenit launch vehicles. Now, the Zenit is sort of like one of the workhorses of the Soviets for their launches. If they can put satellites up, they can certainly put any kind of a warhead up. Now,
right.
The whole thing, it seems like an inept way to run a military strategy, to put something that is so vulnerable out in the ocean. If it was actually going to be an attack thing, then it's going to need some pretty outrageous support.
No, maybe it's just going to put up the satellites like they say it's going to do.
Well, I'm sure they're going to. Just to make everything look
right, nice.
But there's no reason to trust them with all this.
You're absolutely right. Remember, the Carthaginians trusted the Romans.
Yeah, and right. And 37% of the evangelical Christian crowd trusted Clinton in the last presidential election.
Right. Well, that's because they did not have a chance to listen to Radio Liberty. Okay.
That's it.
Anything else, Mike?
Well, thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Jim here. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, that's true, Doctor. We would have avoided the whole war if they could only listen to Radio Liberty. But here's my question. It pushes the envelope a little bit further, and it's from the ilk of the like of Art Smell and that type of thing, what he's talking about. But I'll get it out of the way, and we'll let this expert decide for me. I've heard talk now, speculation, that the Russians and the American CIA are both using what we call remote viewing, that they have some way of using the mind. They can go out of the body. And not astral projection, mind you, which is bad enough, but they use the mind to penetrate other minds and see what's going on, and at times even, terminate other minds.
You got the wrong program. This is not Art Bell. This is Radio Liberty. Go ahead.
I thought it was Art Smell.
Did you have any comment on that, Jeff? That sounded pretty far out to me.
Yeah, there was a defector in the 1950s named Kokhlov, who said that when he was in the KGB, they were doing experiments back then in things that we could only describe as witchcraft. And he said it gave him the shivers.
Now, of course, you're talking about they're looking and delving into the occult. And
yes, using that as a weapon. In a more, I don't know if they've been able to create any practical weapons, but what they have done in the chemical warfare area is astonishing in mind control. They in Czechoslovakia, there was a high party official who they wanted to confess. There was a kind of a power struggle, and they wanted to remove him. They gave him this drug that when he was under its influence, everything he read, everything they told him, he believed was true, and repeated it in court. Then that night when he went to bed, his memory kind of faded on him. He had this bad hangover. When the hangover passed, he could remember everything clearly, and he was astonished at the rubbish that he was told and that he had apparently believed when he was under the influence of the drug.
Sure.
So it's amazing. When people, they are really advanced in this. They're more advanced in Czechoslovakia and Russia than we are in this. And it is something to keep in mind.
Okay, anything else, Jim?
No, but I do think we have to be serious about this, Doctor, because they are tapping the outer recesses of the occult.
No, there's no question, but the common denominator behind this whole, the whole communist movement and the corporate socialist movement here in America and the New Age and theosophical and Masonic movement, the common denominator is the occult.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't believe that these methods are reliable. I've heard the Art Bell programs with these people on because
right.
I'm interested in the intelligence world. I listen to it. I used to, when I was in school, in college, I used to have lunch with a parapsychologist. I used to ask him questions about his studies. He did remote viewing type studies, actually. And the results are not as high as these guys, obviously, as these guys claim. I mean, these people, when you're in a department in the government getting a budget, you're always going to make inflated claims about what you're doing. And I'm very skeptical. I think they might have some good results, but it's a very murky area. And of course, if you're a Christian, you believe that it's murky for a reason.
Well, I agree with you totally, Jeff. The only thing is that if Lucifer wants to use this for his purposes,
exactly.
He will. But I don't think men are going to manipulate Lucifer.
Right, exactly. See, these people, what are they really getting their information from?
Sure.
If they are getting supernatural information.
Well, I think that's this whole thing, as we begin getting into it further and further, you cannot evaluate it without looking at it from the spiritual point of view. Now, what about Y2K? What's your take on Y2K? First of all, what impact will it have on Russia? What impact will it have on China? And what impact will it have on the ability of the United States to defend itself?
Well, it's interesting. I one of the heads of the Duma, one of the advisors to the Russian Duma, who's an expert in the Y2K problem in Russia, says that 80% of their defense systems are affected. Now, this is very blurry. Nobody's spoken specifically about what is affected. The most important thing, of course, obviously early warning systems are important, but we're not going to attack Russia, and I think they know this. The important thing here is the guidance systems of the warheads and the number of chips in them. And I managed to ask a friend of mine who was a computer person who works for one of the intelligence agencies if he knew anything. And he did some checking, and he came back on me, and he said, wow, I'd never thought about checking into the warheads before. And he says, yeah, they're all, as far as he knew, and he had access to secret information, the chips in the Russian warheads are a mess. And, of course, the guidance systems on the warheads are very sophisticated. Without a guidance system, the warheads are useless. And because you have to be able to hit your target on the other side of the world after sailing through space and coming back into the Earth's atmosphere after blasting into outer space. This is what an ICBM does. And if there's no guidance system, it can't hit the target. And on January 1st, year 2000, the calculation of time is all messed up.
Now, what about the global positioning satellite? Do they use our GPS? Do they have their own system, or what?
No, I don't know. Their spy satellite program is classified, of course, and they're not saying what they've got. The Chinese are piggybacking on our GPS.
Well, now, would they be able to just to knock out our spy satellites?
I mean,
they must have
anti-satellite
satellites,
yeah,
or anti-satellite weapons.
Well, the one problem is we have stealth satellites. And the big question is whether they have a method of detecting them. If they don't have a method of detecting, they probably can't attack until they find a way to get to the stealth satellites. But see, with the Clinton administration there, they probably already have the secrets of the stealth satellites and probably know how to find them. So,
could you explain to our listeners, and for me too, of course, what a stealth satellite is? I mean, isn't a satellite a satellite a satellite?
A stealth satellite, like the stealth bomber, is made so that it is not detectable by normal electronic and means.
So, in other words, you can't see it on radar.
You can't see it on radar, right? So that means that, however it's done, you have a satellite there watching you, and you don't even know it's there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now what's going to happen to our system? What's going to happen to our satellites that are up there? Are they Y2K compliant? Is our defense system Y2K compliant?
Well,
will our sophisticated rocketry and planes and tanks and weapons work?
Well, supposedly the Pentagon had a program. They were supposedly 40 at the beginning of last year. I think they were like 40 had a 46% problem, whatever that means, and that they were supposed to be auditing systems and going through them. And later this year it came out, I mean later last year it came out that they were faking the results on a lot of their tests of the defense computer system. That they were falsifying the results to make it look as though they were compliant, you know, Y2K compliant. So it's an enormous problem. And of course the suggestion has been made by the Clinton administration that the Russians come into our early warning centers. And that we go into their early warning centers so that we can watch each other to make sure an accidental nuclear war doesn't happen because of these computer problems.
Well, let me read something that just came in off the fax here from my good friend John Leffler. Do you know John Leffler with the Koinonia House, Chuck Missler?
Well, Chuck Missler. No, I don't know them. Right. I've heard of Chuck Missler.
All right, fine. Well, John does his research for him, and he sends out a Missler report intelligence briefing on a weekly basis. And goes to just a few people, you know, in the talk show business. And this is, we have in our possession the audit report by the Office of the Inspector General of the Department of Defense, mm-hmm. dated December 24th, 1998. A couple of key items and conclusions reached by that office state. The results of the extensive audit and inspection coverage discussed in this report support the Secretary of Defense assessment that high risk exists and the Department of Defense progress in meeting the year 2000 conversion challenge has been insufficient.
Yeah.
All major DOD components, the Office of the Secretary of Defense, the Joint Chief of Staff, the military departments, defense agencies, unified commands, must intensify their efforts in the limited time left before the new millennium. We anticipate continued participation by the audit and inspection community on a very large scale as the conversion effort continues. And so what they're saying is, as of less than 3 weeks ago, we're a long way away from being Y2K compliant. If we're not Y2K compliant with the millennium, would we be subject at that time to a nuclear attack?
I don't think so. It's possible if the Russians have deceived everyone, if they have chips in their warheads that are four-digit chips, to carry the full year number from 1999 to 2000, then they would be in a position to have a fully functional rocket force, and ours might be in serious trouble. We might not be able to launch a retaliatory strike. It's hard to know. I mean, like I say, some of the expert opinion that I've consulted shows that they have a problem here, but these expert opinion could be misled. There's a Joel Skousen, and I, who claims he was on Art Bell, he claims that they have four-digit chips, the Russian military. I don't, you know, he never says where he got this information. My sources indicate that's not correct. But, you know, this is a murky area. This is an area where our lack of intelligence information could be very dangerous to our national security.
Do you think that the communists would be nasty enough to feed us false information as to their nuclear capacity with the coming of the new millennium?
Oh, this is standard practice. They feed us false information all the time.
And the trouble is, I think we usually believe it.
Well, Boris Yeltsin said 6 years ago that they were that after 1995 they weren't going to build any more submarines.
Right.
And they've built 30 submarines in the time that they said they weren't going to build any.
In fact, they're even selling some of their, at least their diesel submarines,
yes.
I think, to Iran. So Iran has submarines.
Yes, that's right. Well, they've sold more than one. Iran has a number of Russian diesel submarines.
Right. And, of course, all Iran needs is some cruise missiles, short-range missiles, and get that submarine off our coast. Do we have any defense against nuclear, submarines, or do we have any patrols looking for submarines, enemy submarines off our coast today?
Well, we're supposed to, but I know that here in Northern California they had a submarine monitoring station, and they've closed it down because at the end of the Cold War they don't need to look for submarines anymore.
And of course, but the thing is, when you have these... wait a minute, do we still have Jim on the line?
Jim, yes, but I'm ready to say goodnight. You've done a great job.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were still there.
Well, it's a very good vantage point. It's like a ringside seat, Doctor.
We're always glad to have you as a guest.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much. Okay, our number is 464-8295 or out across America if you're listening to us. And you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But we're lucky to have Jeff Nyquist with us because he's right on the cutting edge of so much of what's going on across America today. And that's why we encourage you to get the information, begin to understand what this is about. We recommend very strongly his book, The Origins of the Fourth World War, Stanislaus Lunev's book, Through the Eyes of the Enemy, a Colonel in the GRU, brand new book. I think that it was so revealing because the Colonel Lunev talked about the Russian units. Now, are those the Spetsnik units actually here in the United States at this time, Jeff, or would they be brought in anticipation of a nuclear war?
There are always some here training and becoming familiar with their area of operations, but most of them are not here.
But what about these suitcase-type nuclear bombs that he talked about?
As far as we know, they're not here, but they would be deployed here. What happens is when the Russians feel that nuclear war is imminent, they will deploy 7,000 Spetsnaz commandos into the United States dressed as civilians or tourists, whatever, and they will also smuggle in the nuclear warheads. Then they will begin their operations of creating mayhem and confusion before the nuclear war so that our systems will be disrupted from within. We'll be busy preoccupied with perhaps what we imagine is an internal terrorism threat or an uprising by the U.S. military. That's one of the Spetsnaz operations, to attempt to make it appear as though our military is revolting against the president. There are various tricks that they can play on us at that point. But 7,000 commandos, that's quite a deployment.
Well, you know, one of the things that I hear is that there's a real serious question within the military whether they'll have communications. In fact, the information we have is that they're going to have a trial mobilization of the National Guard in May of this year, and they're going to try to do this without using standard communications to see how this will work and coming up with alternative forms of radios, some of the very old radios that don't have chips in them, because these will work, and they're afraid that many of their more modern means of communication won't be effective. Have you heard any information on that?
No, I haven't. Maybe they'll just have to use the Paul Revere method, huh? I'll have to find Paul Revere and get him to...
You mean the Redcoats are coming? The Redcoats are coming?
I think it dropped the word coat.
Right. Maybe the Reds are coming.
Right.
I don't think they're coming. I think they're already here. I think they're working at every level of our government, because that's where communists work. In fact, I have the most wonderful communist directive of June 23rd, 1963, that I received in the mail from the Communist Party at that time, laying out their plan for centralization of all power in the central government. Would be glad to send a free copy of that to any of our listeners who'd like a copy of it, because almost every aspect of it has been carried out, whether it was a federal health care system for the elderly, whether it was the extension of the right to vote to those children, the young people who are 18 years of age, whether it was a federal welfare system, health care system. It was this whole idea of centralization of all power with the federal government. That was the communist plan. But that is also, of course, the plan of the Council on Foreign Relations and Trilateral Commission, which have been, in many respects, responsible for financing both the domestic and foreign communist movement, which is an incredible, incredible story. And yet, of course, one only has to read the writings of Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, who will tell you that all these crazy right-wingers who believe that there's a communist conspiracy out there should really understand that the power of the communists was never their own power, but the power of the financial and intellectual elite. Have you ever read any of Professor Quigley's writings?
Yes, I read his book, The Anglo-American Establishment.
Have you read The Tragedy and Hope?
I read the first few chapters of it. It's very tedious. I find him to be a third-rate historian myself.
Have you looked at all into the secret society he writes about?
Oh, yeah, of course. You mean Cecil Rhodes?
Right.
And try to remember the name of the Royal... What was it called again?
Well, it was the Round Table Group, and then, of course, it became the fronts for the Round Table, became the Royal Institute for International Affairs.
Right.
And, of course, in America, the Council on Foreign Relations.
Right. I think that a distinction has to be made between an internationalist Anglo-maniac like Cecil Rhodes and out-and-out communist. You know, Hitler was a socialist. Socialism was a kind of a hobby horse of many political figures, from Woodrow Wilson's advisor, Colonel House, to some of the people around President Roosevelt. But you got to remember that according to a Marxist-Leninist, someone from Moscow or Beijing, anyone, these so-called democratic socialists in the West are a farce.
They're sort of a useful idiot, I think, the term they use.
They would regard them, in fact, Lenin uses the word, bourgeois fake. They're bourgeois. They're not really socialists. They're tools of the ruling class, the communists would say. And I think that what you'd find is that the communists are more eager to, the communists in Russia, at least, are more eager to kill socialists, people who believe a slightly different kind of Marxism than they are eager to kill conservatives when they take over countries. There was a book by a man named Milos, who was a Polish diplomat who defected, and it was called The Captive Mind. And he talked about the transformation of Poland into a communist country by the Russians and how they really treated the conservatives and the nationalists very gently and brought them along, wanted to convert them to communism more than the existing social democrats, who they were more suspicious of.
Well, you know, I've been back to the headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations at 5080 68th Street, and one of the most fascinating things is right next to this massive, great big mahogany desk where the librarian sits is this little stand, and it has a light in it, and it's glass top, and beneath that is a copy of Foreign Affairs magazine, the official publication of the Council on Foreign Relations, and it's the one that Lenin had read and written, and it anecdotal remarks in Russian in the margins.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that is one of the most treasured possessions of these very wealthy elitists, Ivy League elitists who make up this group, who think that they're going to be able to use communism for their objectives and goals. But I'm sure the reason that Lenin was so excited reading the publication of the Council on Foreign Relations that he realized that he was going to be able to use this group, these people of great power and great wealth, to further his goals. Each group thinking they're using the other one, but in the end result, of course, the human suffering that's been wrought is just amazing. We've got Trudy calling here. Hi, Trudy.
Well, hello, Dr. Smith.
And with this call from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Yes, how are you tonight?
We're doing fine. How
Wonderful.
Are you?
Wonderful. I've heard Jeff a few times on his show. Now, Jeff, you're a Christian, are you?
Yes.
Good, wonderful. And what my question is, every time I hear you speak, I always want to ask, how does what you're talking about fit into Bible prophecy?
All right, so let's give you an opening there. Do you have any thoughts on that at all, Jeff?
Well, I was on a three-month speaking tour for Prophecy Club, and because they were interested in what I was saying, and they felt very strongly that what I was saying backed up Bible prophecy. It's a difficult area. I'm not a trained as a theologian, or I don't read the Bible in the original Greek or Hebrew, but the 18th book of the 18th chapter of the book of Revelation is suggestive, where Babylon is destroyed in 1 hour.
So are you then saying, like, what I was kind of always questioning in my mind, when you talk about the Russians and their buildup of power, are you seeing this then as Armageddon, like your Fourth World War then as Armageddon?
No, I don't. You know, my grandfather was both of my grandfathers were ministers.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother's father said something very wise. I found it so. He said that the Bible is very, very clear in the middle and kind of fuzzy at the beginning and the ending. But the middle is the part we really need to know to live our lives.
Right, and the other is fun to speculate about, but it's hard to be absolutely certain, although there are certainly things there that can give you a feeling, but...
You know what Jesus said? He said, watch.
Right.
You know, and he put it in the book for a reason.
Right. But when you see all these things coming to pass, you will know, just as when you see the fig tree and you begin to see it begin to bud, you know the leaves are very, very soon going to follow. Right. I would suggest, Trudy, we've got a great new little book. It's called The Secret History, and it's written by a fellow named D. Zonner. And of course, it goes into the analogy between ancient Babylon and modern-day Babylon. It's rather inexpensive, and it really answers the question that you're asking. The Secret History is the name of it.
I was just wanting Jeff's viewpoint, because like, I've heard him talk, you know, a few times.
Right.
These are the questions that
I'm always there are some things in the Bible that are so suggestive of our time that it's hard not to wonder if we aren't near the end, so to speak, near the millennium.
When,
near the millennium is right.
The millennium, yeah. Well, I mean, the millennium when Christ returns. I know. When Christ returns to reign on earth for 1,000 years. I don't know. I don't know how to understand these things.
Okay, that's fair enough. I just wanted to ask one more quick question. Like,
it's possible.
Dr. Stan, you were talking earlier, too, about how the American, the war, like your military was being brought down. But it seems that it's being brought into the United Nations, like with Britain as well. That's what I'm sort of picking up. Have you seen this at all, or am I just seeing things?
My feeling is, of course, there's different interpretations. I mean, politics is an extremely complex subject. Everybody Monday morning quarterbacks in politics, but really it's hard to have a good understanding of things. My interpretation of the UN is that it's a kind of Trojan horse. That the UN itself, I mean, ask yourself, what is the United Nations? It's the General Assembly where all the nations are represented with a vote. And then you have the Security Council, on which the rotating members of the Security Council and the permanent members have a veto on whatever the General Assembly or the other members want to do. So here you have a situation where, really, the UN cannot do much, because if it acts against any one country's interest, that country just simply vetoes it. If that country is a great power like the United States or Great Britain or France, you know, the countries that have a permanent veto, permanent seat in the Security Council. So the UN can only work as a kind of Trojan horse. That is, we go along with this internationalism, and then the communists exploit that, and they ride along with it.
Wouldn't you say that our leaders want a one-world government and a new world spirituality, and the communists want a one-world government and a new world spirituality, so they're both heading the same direction, and yet there is a rivalry between them? Would you agree or disagree with that?
Both wanted to rule the world, but... their world wasn't big enough for the both of them.
Amen to that.
Yeah, I think the real impetus behind this one world order is the business elite, the international business elite, because the reason they want a one world order is money. People who have lots of money, they don't want to be restricted to what country they can send their money to and from. And borders are barriers to money. They're barriers to goods. Mm-hmm. They're barriers to trafficking. And the reality is they want all those barriers broken down so that they can then do the economic things that they want to do to get even richer.
But isn't this also the goal of world communism? They want a one-world government, but for a different reason.
Yeah, for a different reason. Yeah, the communists want one-world government in order to smash the world market.
And then, of course, don't the socialists want a one-world government, too? Isn't that part of the socialist international?
Well, the socialist international is possibly a front or manipulated by the communist international. There's been some, I think Galitzin talks about that possibility, and I think it's the perestroika deception.
Well, if they are, we're in real trouble, because now England and France and Germany and Italy and Spain are all... I don't know about Italy, but I know Spain. Yeah. They're all under the control of the socialist international leaders.
Yeah.
Hey, anything else you wanted to ask, Trudy?
Well, no, I'm just going to say I'm going to keep on studying my Bible and keep watching.
God,
the Lord bless both of you.
Okay, thanks so very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we lost Tony on the line. And Tony, give us a call back. We're going to have to take our break here when we have to tell people that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. When we get back, we're hoping that if you're out there in the listening audience, you'll give us a call at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Or if you're listening across America or in Canada, as Trudy was, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And, of course, we always like to get calls from across America. And, of course, we always love to get a call from Canada. So we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Don't even think about changing that dial, because we've got an exciting half hour coming up, and we've got Tony back on the line, so we'll get to him just as soon as we get through this brief announcement. Not a commercial announcement, just letting you know who it is who finances our effort to reach people from sea to shining sea. Dan Back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener supported. And if you agree with our message and would like to help us, why of course we'd love to hear from you, because it's people like you out there in the listening audience that we depend upon to help us, not only to pay our bills, but to expand our coverage from station to station to station. And we've been on 20 stations now here for some time. We're going to start our 21st station, and that's going to be a station in San Francisco, and we're hoping that we can begin to reach into that terribly dark area, and that we can begin to get people listening to our programs there, getting onto our website. And of course, those of you who don't know, our website is www.radioliberty.com. We hope that you will talk to other people and tell them to start listening to our website. And if they don't have a sophisticated computer, they can get a web TV for less than $100, hook it up to the Internet, have access to the information on the Internet, have access to our website, and, of course, then they can link through that to other websites. And we encourage you to do that. We encourage you to get onto the Internet, because that's the only vehicle we have today of getting the real truth out. That, and of course, talk radio programs that are heard on the Internet. I wish we could be on 640 stations like Rush Limbaugh, but of course, it's pretty hard to do that. You might be interested in knowing what Michael Reagan told me when I had lunch with him not too long ago, and that is that Rush Limbaugh, Michael Reagan, and Art Bell are all syndicated by the same people, which is why none of them are going to really tell you about the forces that work behind the scenes and how these international financiers dedicated to world government, as Jeff was saying, no real loyalty to America, have one agenda and the communists have another. The whole idea that communism is dead and no longer is a problem is simply part of the disinformation that's being funneled into our minds. But behind everything that's going on today are these dark and sinister spiritual forces that have been at work in the world since the Garden of Eden. They were there at the time when of the Great Flood, and that's why God destroyed the world at that time. But he said, I'll not destroy the world by flood again. Next time, it'll be by fire. And then, of course, the battle was there at the time of Nimrod, and you see it over and over again in the Old Testament. And you see the same battle being waged today on a spiritual battlefield, but also for most people simply a political and ideological battlefield. And our plea is, get involved. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and join with us. Help us, because we need your help to get onto other stations, and we appreciate so much those of you who are regular listeners who have supported us in some month after month, ever since we've been here for almost 4 years now. You have our gratitude. And really, I do appreciate your confidence in us. It's sort of some humbling to think that people will support you in what we're doing. Well, anyway, if you're not already a member of the Radio Liberty family, we'd love to hear you again. The number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we've got Tony on the line. Hi, Tony. How you doing?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, do you have a question or comment?
I'm surprised there.
What's that?
Caught me surprised.
Oh, I didn't mean to surprise you. Boo.
You were mentioning the Tower of Babel, and funny, I was thinking today that computerization may be the modern Tower of Babel.
Well, or at least America may be the modern Tower of Babylon. In fact, if you read Alas, Babylon, Mother of Harlots, you know, and just in one short moment, it was destroyed, and all the merchants of the world wept, because, of course, it all had shared in her bounty. And who is the leading mercantile nation in the world today? Who is the leading nation, a leading consumer? And what nation would be missed most by the merchants of the world if it were destroyed? I don't know. I'm just asking the question. I don't have the answers.
I think they were called the merchants of Tarshish. But actually, the reason I called is because I really don't believe the United States is Babylon. I'm not convinced.
Okay, well, I hope you're right.
Well, you know, there's an interesting verse in Jeremiah. I haven't read it in a long time, but I remember reading it several times, and there was a lead basket fact, you could look it up in a concordance under lead basket, but there was a lead basket with a lid on it, and it was being taken away by angels, and then Jeremiah said something to the effect of, where is it going to? And they said, to Babylon, to the city of the mother of all false religions, something to that extent. I'm paraphrasing it.
But, of course, that was the real Babylon, wasn't it? Because there was Babylon existed at the time of Jeremiah. And then, of course, is that the same as Mystery Babylon? And is that the same as the Babylon of the Book of Revelation? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I'd suggest this little book by D. Zoner on the secret history and comparing ancient Babylon to modern-day Babylon. It's an interesting book.
Well, there's Hislop's book, too, The Two Babylons. But I'm not going to talk about who he compares Babylon
right.
to. But, I mean, he has a lot of good thought to, you know, back up what he says, even though I don't necessarily agree with it.
All right, well, let's get Jeff's thoughts on that. Jeff, have you ever contemplated what the Babylon is? And I know you're not a theologian. Of course, neither am I. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I heard someone very intelligently explain that there was more than one Babylon mentioned.
Right.
That Mystery Babylon is different than the real Babylon.
Right.
Some people think that refers to Rome, mm-hmm. that the Mystery Babylon in the 18th chapter of Revelation refers to the fall of the Roman Empire.
Right.
And that's quite possible. And so, therefore, some people think that the return of the Roman Empire hails the return of the Antichrist or the coming of the Antichrist. But, you know, like I say, that gets pretty murky.
Sure. I think it's a lot of fun to speculate, but I mean, there's so many real threats here that we need to think about. That, I think, is where our major thrust has to be. How would you feel about that, Tony?
One thing, you know how I am, Dr. Stan. I'm a believer in the Lord Jesus. So, I mean, it's like, I don't think anybody's ever questioning me on that. But I do have a lot of doubt about what a lot of people say about a lot of things.
Well, that's a good, healthy skepticism to keep you out of trouble.
Mm-hmm. But, for instance, I don't believe the United States is Babylon. And another thing, even as I listen to secular radio, I hear a lot of people being very concerned about the year 2000, Y2K, whatever. Today I heard something about Nostradamus said the world was supposed to end this year in the ninth month. I mean,
right. There's
all kinds of stuff.
What do we have until September then?
Whatever.
Can I share something with you?
Go ahead.
I got a call from Central America last week from a friend who had been contacted by a member of the ruling government in this country. And he had recently come back from a trip to New York where they'd been taken by the United Nations and briefed on what was going to happen. And what they were told, and this is the message I have now from the woman who got it from the man who got it from in New York City, so you know it's right out of the horse's mouth, but the story I got was that he was told that the Y2K was going to be a disaster for the world, but the country that was going to be hit the worst was the United States. And it wasn't going to start December 7th. It was going to start on September 9th, 1999, when they would the date would read 090999. Now, I'm just throwing that. And this is just the latest rumor for the rumor mill. And don't hold me to that. But I thought it was so interesting that you suggested September.
Well, that's just something I heard on the
right. Secular
radio.
Okay.
But what is the official day that begins the government's new fiscal year? Isn't it in September, or is it October 1st or August? It's in there somewhere.
I'm not an expert on that. Do you have any thoughts on that, Jeff?
No, I don't know.
It may be in July. Maybe somebody out there.
Well, whenever the government's fiscal year begins, it's sometime in the summer or early autumn.
I think it is the beginning of July, but I'm not sure.
Right.
Yeah, we'll know what happens to the government's computers then.
Right.
So we'll have a little bit of a warning on that. But the only reason I actually really called was because, if there are a lot of people listening to all the, different scenarios of what could happen and this and that, and, I've thought about, things like that before too, but, one thing, as a person who, I happen to believe the Bible and prophecy and all that, and in 2 Thessalonians there's a key element that hasn't happened yet. And
no, what's that key element? Is that
well,
really
there has to be a temple or a place or a temple established of worship for, that will be defiled by the Antichrist. And I still don't see this temple yet. So, you know, like nuclear war, this, that, and all the other. I mean, I just don't know. I mean, when that temple gets rebuilt, then I'll start worrying about it. Up until then, I think it's all conjecture.
Yeah, you may very well be right, Tony.
So
but the one thing I would
think there could be another world war and
oh, absolutely.
And, like,
I do believe that there could be a limited war, something even maybe twice as afflicting upon the earth as World War II was. But as far as the end of civilization in general, no.
No, but the thing is that things should be pretty bad, at least here in Santa Cruz, you know, with a nuclear war, don't you think?
Oh, it could ruin the progressives' whole day.
Right.
I don't think nuclear war is the end of civilization. I'm sorry, I can't agree with that statement.
No, I don't think Tony believes that either.
Yeah.
So, but I think that we really have to be very, very concerned. If Y2K is nothing but a glitch along the road, maybe at least some people will make some preparation that they may be able to survive if we do have a nuclear war, because I share Jeff's sincere concern that we are sitting ducks and we have an enemy that intends to win, and we have nobody in Washington, D.C. who ever talks about winning anymore. All we want to do is just be left alone and live the good life, and that, of course, leaves us wide open for a perhaps weaker but more determined enemy to become victorious. Would you agree or disagree with that, Jeff?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. Yeah, that's the position that we're in.
Well, it's absolutely yes. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there across America, why give us a call. Well, now, in your newsletter, is there anything else you wanted to say about Y2K or any of the things before we get on into what's unfolding in Africa and the terrible tragedy that's going on there?
No, I've just about said everything I have to say on Y2K.
Okay. Well, do you think it's going to be a major problem? Do you think it's going to be a minor problem? Do you think it's going to be just no problem at all?
I suspect that the United States will be one of the least hurt countries by Y2K, that the other countries like Japan and Europe will be, and, of course, Russia and China will be hurt worse.
Okay, let's go to Ken in Los Angeles. Hi, Ken. How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good this evening.
Fine. How are we coming through on the Internet?
Oh, coming through fine.
Isn't this amazing technology?
Oh, I love it.
Oh, okay, fine.
Boy, I hope it's not costing you a fortune to stay on the Internet, because, boy, we sure appreciate it in areas that we don't have a radio station.
Well, I appreciate your listening, and if you can get people out there to support us so that we can keep doing what we're doing, why, we'll sure appreciate it.
Okay. I got a couple of questions to fire at you. You mentioned Russia's got a stealth fighter now. How does it compare to more like the 117A or our new F-22?
Some people say that it's better than anything we have. Specifics, nobody really knows.
Yeah, because our F-117A was just pretty sneaky, but the 22 is not only sneaky, but it's fast.
Oh, this thing is maneuverable, supposedly.
This is the M-16, or what's the new Russian fighter?
I just read it yesterday.
Okay, don't feel bad. I can't
remember. It's blanked out of my mind.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, we all know what we're talking about. That's new Russian fighter and with all sorts of new technology. I think anything we have really is sort of a speculative, Ken, but apparently it's a very, very sophisticated fighter.
So we don't have any pictures of it yet.
According to the news article I read yesterday, it hasn't been flown yet, if you can believe that.
Okay. Well, it takes 7 to 9 years to get a stealth airplane in the air from design to making it work.
But the question is, how long have they been working on it?
Exactly.
Yeah, whether or not they actually have some of these things already operational and have been using it, you know, could be.
In fact, it was very interesting, Ken. We had an opportunity of interviewing James Woolsey, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and he had been on the Rumsfeld Commission, and he was saying that, of course, the administration keeps saying that we have nothing to worry about. It'd take the Chinese and any other nation at least 5 years to be able to develop technology, satellite or missile technology, to be able to hit the United States. But now we wouldn't know maybe when they got started. So they may have got started, 3 years ago. So we've only got 2 years to come up and get that missile defense in position in case they launch a missile at us. And I commented, but what happened if they started working on it 5 years ago? And there was sort of a dead silence. And then he said, well, I don't think they've done that. But he was very, very concerned, as were the people of this commission. And these were people, you know, most of them are very, very liberal. I mean, I think that the House appointed three, and Bill Clinton appointed three, and I think maybe the Senate appointed three to this commission. And, you know, and they all agreed that we were in real danger of a nuclear war. Now, I think Bill Clinton's appointees didn't necessarily want to deploy at a ballistic missile system, but certainly James Woolsey and most of the members of the committee did.
Somewhere about a year ago, and I wish I had marked my calendar when Chuck Missler stated it, but he said that his intelligence sources at that time said it was a possibility within 18 months of seeing a Russian invasion of Israel. And my memory is a little weak. It could have been a year plus or minus like 5 months or something.
He uses very often the Intelligence Digest and De Corsi's information. Jeff, do you have any thoughts on that?
The Intelligence Digest that said it, I believe they said it was a year and a half ago, that late 98 was when they were afraid there would be an invasion.
Right.
Or a war in the Middle East.
He's been saying that for quite some time.
Yeah, they have.
And if he keeps saying this, you know, eventually he's probably going to be right. But, you know, I've been reading it for some time. I can remember him 10 years ago. I don't think any of us can be absolutely certain, Ken. But I just, so many things seem to be falling in place. Maybe Y2K is just a big scare. But I've got a feeling it's going to be used for a very definite purpose. And our newsletter, which will be sent out to our supporters, is going to go into great detail on really what Y2K is really all about.
Uh-huh. And final point here. I discovered this quite accidentally firsthand, so this is no hearsay. I know the person that was involved in it. During last year, there was an exchange program between American FBI people and local police departments in Ukraine. Now, that I know for a fact. What I don't know is, what were they exchanging?
Have any thoughts on that, Jeff?
As I recall, we were giving them the benefits of our great crime-fighting skills.
Sure, and, you know, we're sending the special forces over to train the Chinese communists. We're creating the best enemies that money can buy and create. I mean,
well,
we did this.
The FBI going to Ukraine. Maybe the Ukraine will collapse, and they try the law enforcement methods of the FBI.
Okay, so it was a method to try to sabotage Ukraine. You know?
We don't know.
Some
know.
Russians might actually say yes, or some Ukrainians.
Right. These are just very, very trying times, because I think the Soviets are masters of deception. I personally believe that the fall of Russia was totally contrived, and this seems to be the position that was taken by Anatoly Golitsyn in his book New Lies for Old and Perestroika Deception, the position taken by General Lunev, and we carry his book now, New Lies for Old, certainly Jeff's book, which is excellent, the Fourth World War, and we've just started carrying that. We think it's a really must reading because it's a great overview, and it has many quotations from both General Lunev, Colonel Lunev, and from Anatoly Golitsyn, and what was that, General Senya, that defected to the West?
Yeah, Major General Jan Sena.
Sena, right.
Yeah, he defected in 1967, and he had been, in 68, and he had been shown the long-range Soviet bloc strategy in 1967.
Jeff did a real good job on that, his book, and we really think it's well worthwhile. Anything else, Ken?
Just a little quick thing I just learned on Y2K again firsthand. On my job, due to turnover in personnel, I got appointed to take care of the company's voicemail system. It is a classic voicemail produced by Lucent Technologies.
The right out of the pit of hell, huh?
Exactly. And the thing runs on a 286 chip, which couldn't read a four-digit date if it had to. And secondly, when you set around to programming it to tell it to shut down during holidays and such, the code you use to tell it that the business is closed is 9999.
9999. Well, of course, that's why they feel that we may have troubles on September 9th, 1999.
Exactly.
Have you ever noticed the Lucent Technology logo?
I've heard your comments on it,
right.
Yeah,
you see it, and if you notice over about 9 o'clock, it's just a little irregular. If you see the pictures of the snake eating its tail, ordinarily, that, of course, is where you'll see the snake's head and the tail together. Maybe it's just coincidence. It's a strange, strange name for a company, Lucent. Almost sounds like Lucifer. Exactly. And then, of course, that they would pick a fiery circle as their logo. And then, of course, they come out of AT&T, and AT&T is one of the big corporations that tied up with this whole world internationalist movement and financing, of course, the homosexual movement, et cetera, et cetera. But behind all of this is this pagan movement that is really intent upon the destroying Christian society and Christian civilization. Okay, Ken, thanks so very much.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks for calling, and it's always good to hear from Los Angeles.
Okay. Good night.
Okay, well, you know, it's really exciting, Jeff, because this last week we had calls from Arcadia and several calls from various places in Los Angeles, a call from Minnesota last night, I believe, and, of course, Trudy. Internet is the way to go. We just need to get people listening, and if you have any friends out there, why, please tell them to start listening on the Internet, and they'll be able to hear Jeff Nyquist from time to time. I hope we can call on you as a guest.
Well, that would be nice. Thanks.
Okay. Well, let's get that address out in case people would like to get Jeff's material. And the telephone number, pardon me, the address, if you'd like to get a hold of Jeff's The Final Phase, and does that come out monthly or bi-monthly?
It comes out every month.
Okay, it's you just write to J.R. Nyquist, N-Y-Q-U-I-S-T, Post Office Box 4931, Eureka, California, 95502. And I think we've got Mike back on the line again. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Stan. I just had to call back. Didn't want that little discussion on Lucent to go by.
All right. Do you think there's any significance to that name?
Just my comment sort of fortifies what you're saying. If anybody really wants to see something, just check out the building that Lucent's headquarters is in. That's in New York City on Fifth Avenue.
That's 666?
Their address is 666 Fifth Avenue.
Oh, but you're
And if you walk south on Fifth Avenue a few blocks and look back up at the building, especially at night, you can see the 666 in like 20-foot tall numbers. The building is 28 stories high, and the numbers are all the way up there. It's in flaming red, and this is said by some sources, which I consider to be questionable, but this is said to be the North American hub for the computer system that I think is really headquartered in Brussels. That will be the global financial computer system.
Aren't they involved in computer technology, chip technology, for injection into people? Or are they working along that line, people identification?
The subdermal implants?
I don't know.
They probably are. I don't know that for a fact.
I thought maybe you'd know.
But we can expect that to come from a lot of different directions.
Right, and of course, but they are involved in sort of tracking people's activities, aren't they?
What was the
real function of Lucent?
It seems fairly secret. I couldn't speak with any kind of authority about the company. You can go to their website, but there's nothing there. It's just communication stuff and just different everyday products.
They're an offshoot of AT&T, and they've only been around maybe for a couple of years, and I see they're suddenly buying up some other company for $1.6 billion or $16 billion, some fantastic sum of money. I wonder where they're getting all that money.
Well,
anyway, anything else?
You're so big on rhetorical questions.
Right. No,
that's all. Thanks.
Okay, fine. Well, I just think it's a strange situation. I don't know the answers, but I just have an uneasy feeling. I know that Tex Mars has written to them and asked them why they called it Lucent, and they gave him back some answers. Incidentally, Tex Mars has an excellent book, of which we don't happen to carry, but Tex will be our guest here in two or three weeks on the afternoon program sometime after the 15th of February, I think. He has an excellent book on Lucent technology, and I think that it's certainly is very, very provocative and thought-provoking. I don't have the answer. He's going to be the guest on the afternoon of the 18th of February, if any of you out there listening would like to hear his treatise on this. Well, Jeff, we're just about out of time. Do you have some parting thoughts for our listeners? What do you think people should be doing? What should our country be doing? What should our listeners to this program be doing?
Well, you should be pressing your congressman on defense issues and on security issues. Right now, the Congress has resolved to increase defense spending over the next 6 years by $100 billion, and that's a good thing. Let's hold their feet to the fire and make sure they spend it wisely and that we get defenses for this country.
Now, aren't our whole defense establishment just falling apart, really? I mean, I've heard that lots of times they're having to cannibalize some of our better airplanes to keep the other planes flying.
Yes, it's in a bad state, and the morale of the armed forces is low, too, because of the way Clinton and his Pentagon have handled things.
And, of course, this tailhook, right,
yes.
Situation, that was very, very demoralizing.
And they've cut benefits, and they've cut some of the goodies that our service people get, and it's really a sacrifice. Who work for the armed services, you don't get paid a lot.
And haven't an awful lot of our Air Force pilots and naval pilots just sort of thrown in the towel and said, we just as soon go off to private industry where we make a lot more money and stay at home?
Yeah, we're facing pilot shortages, yes. By the year 2002, it's going to be very serious.
So basically what we're looking at is a hollow military in an uncertain world. And this is certainly, in my way of thinking, the best way that you could encourage an enemy attack.
That's right. Weakness always invites attack.
I think it was Plato who said only the dead have seen the end of war, and it was George Washington who said that if you want peace, why prepare for war? It would appear that we are preparing for peace and perhaps just laying ourselves totally open for attack.
Well, if you want war, prepare for peace.
Right. And, of course, that's exactly what we're doing is we're unilaterally disarming. It's just incredible what's going on. Jeff, I want to thank you so very much for writing the book, The Origins of the Fourth World War. And we've already had a number of orders for it. We think it's going to be a very, very important book. We'll do everything we can to get it circulated for you. Thank you so much for coming on with us on short notice, especially for that second hour this evening when our guest came down with the flu. May the Lord watch over you, and please keep in touch. If anything comes up, get in touch with me, and we'll give you a voice that heard from Edmonton, Alberta, all the way to Los Angeles.
Okay, thank you very much, Stan.
You're welcome. Good night, and God
Bye-bye.
Bless you. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and for a program that we just sort of talked and rambled. I apologize for not having a real specific agenda, but I think we covered a lot of very important things. And I'm very impressed with Jeff's material. And I should point out that Jeff has been apparently hired by Chris Ruddy. He's going to be writing for Chris in his new Vortex magazine. I've seen it. I think it's going to be an excellent source of information. And we need these alternative sources so that we can bring you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, as we always like to say, the information that Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, and Barbara Walters will not tell you. And so without further ado, we're just going to have to wish you good night, remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will want to participate so that we can continue doing what we're doing, bringing you the story, and, of course, bringing a realization that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, why, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
KFUR 89.9 on your FM dial in Santa Cruz. With comprehensive commentary on the news and issues of the day, we bring you news you won't hear anywhere else. Whether it's rain or shine, work or play, you'll have brilliant stereo and beautiful music 24 hours a day right here at 89.9 KFER, your Moody Broadcast affiliate for the Central California Coast.